Let me start that again. This is case 22-232. On January 14th, 2023, the board received a complaint from MS. After a follow-up interview with MS on 1/19/2023, the case was open. Respondent was notified of the complaint on January 19th, 2023 and was given 15 days to respond. The complaint from MS alleges respondent has been diverting prescriptions, medications to her husband, Anthony S., who lives in the state of Wisconsin. Respondent would prescribe the medication to JPP, a person who lives in the state of Arizona, and JPP would forward them to Anthony S., who resides in the state of Washington. By his own admission, respondent diverted prescription medications to a patient in the state of Washington with the help of his patient here in Arizona. While the medication semaglutide is FDA approved, MK677, CJC1295, and BPC157 appear to be unapproved. There are very little chart notes relating to these two patients. Text messages do not take the place of charting. There are no chart notes for any of the prescriptions written by respondent for either of these two patients, and no indication of any type of medical necessity for these prescriptions. Even after the patients describe potential side effects from the medications, there are no notes indicating respondent addressed these medications. The board holds jurisdiction only over respondent. However, diversion of prescription medications across state lines is a criminal matter. Regardless of any action the board takes regarding respondent, it is the opinion of this investigator that the matter should be forwarded to the Arizona AG's office for criminal investigation to include all parties involved in the matter.
And is the complainant present? MS?
I am present.
Okay. I'm going to hear from the doctor first, and then we'll hear from you. So Dr. Ranson, are you gonna be speaking or is your attorney?
Good afternoon, this is Mandy Carvis, counsel for Dr. Rassanen, and he is also present. I will just make a brief statement and then he would be available to answer any questions that the board members may have, if that's acceptable.
That's fine.
Okay, thank you. Dr. Rassanen submitted a response to the complaint on his own and acknowledged that he had improperly provided this medication, these substances, to a patient that was located in Wisconsin. He obviously acknowledged that that was not appropriate behavior. However, we also provided supplemental information yesterday. I don't know if the board members received that information, but I thought it would be helpful for the board to have more information about the peptides that were provided. So we provided some more information about that so that the board was aware specifically of what type of substances were at issue and how those were prepared in terms of being prepared by a compounding pharmacy and the purpose and medical intent of those things. Again, he acknowledges that this was not something that should have been done and understands that there will likely be consequences as a result of that. This was an isolated incident and not something that he has engaged in before or since. We do not believe that this warrants or rises to the level of referral to the Attorney General's office for the doctor or anyone involved. We're not talking about illegal medications or substances or things of that nature. This was obviously an error in judgment, but certainly not something that we believe rises to the level of warranting a criminal offense. If the board has any specific questions for the doctor with respect to these particular peptides or their use in general or specific to these patients, he's happy to address them. If this board would like more information as to anything or would like to see him take some continuing education courses or things of that nature with respect to ethical practice, ethical prescribing, anything of that nature, he would certainly be willing to comply with whatever this board would like him to do. And again, he's present if anyone has any direct questions for him. Thank you.
Thank you. It's Dr. Sadlick. Dr. Ransom, what was the, how many times roughly did you utilize and work with the individual from Phoenix to get the medication to Wisconsin?
I think it was on 2 or 3 occasions.
Okay. And what was the logic? How did we get here today? Why did you decide to utilize him and do what happened?
Yeah. So I got to know JP or Jason Penscover, and so Jason had mentioned to me, hey, you got to get,
are we referring,
get to
I'm
know.
Sorry, this is Beth, the board's attorney. If we are referring to a patient, and we may not be at this moment, but please use patient initials at all times.
Okay, thank you. So I was introduced to JP and got to know him. And JP told me that I should get to know this guy named Anthony in Wisconsin. We ended up having a visit, which his wife Miranda, or she was on the call as well. Anyways, and then from there, I just received multiple text messages from Anthony requesting that I check into some different peptides for him. And going against, you know, my better judgment, obtained and, you know, sent those peptides to JP, who said, sure, I'll send them on to Anthony, no problem.
And in terms of Anthony, we'll just use that first name. How much data did you have on this patient?
So he did send me lab work, at one point. I did have a relatively full panel on his blood work, and just through conversations with him, visits with him, and then, I did record, you know, those were the main things, or phone calls that we had, messages that we shared, and then the lab work that I had from him.
And is your practice here in Arizona basically based on peptide therapeutics?
My practice here in Arizona is based on, you know, regenerative medicine. So we do hormone replacement things and or hormone replacement and optimization and peptides, yes.
And the people you see in your office currently, tell me,
yes,
what the standard procedure would be for those patients.
Patients who come into the office or I always get blood work on all my patients and conduct a pertinent physical exam and then prescribe based on, you know, regular use, like if the need is there and they feel, you know, their symptoms are present, and the lab work doesn't deem it unnecessary, of course, or impractical or harmful, then I would, you know, if peptides are appropriate, then I would apply them in that case.
Okay, and then your sole therapeutic with the peptides would be what? Optimization, longevity, etc.
Correct. Workout recovery, and better sleep, maybe weight loss, things like that.
And what's your usual route? Is it intramuscular? Is it PO by mouth? Is it both?
So body protecting compound BPC-157 is typically oral, because it also has a BPC is oral, CJC, ipamorelin, is a it's oral or injectable. In this case, oral is used just because, you know, it's just, you know, I didn't want to send injectable things. Oral is more easy in this case. But CJC, Epimoral is more often is injectable, and then the semaglutide is often injectable as well.
And how often are you working with patients out of state?
Rarely, if ever. This was an isolated case of me sending something to somebody, but generally speaking, not sending anything. I mean, I've done a couple consultations during the COVID period, you know, talking to people about diet or lifestyle or things like that, but those have all been, you know, passed on and are no longer am I engaging in any of that.
Okay, and then just so my clarification, then I'll turn it over to my other board members. The individual in Scottsdale that would send it to Wisconsin, was he a patient also?
Yes.
Okay. Let me just have my other board members ask questions. So I'll start with my Dr. Popio.
Dr. Peter, a couple questions for you. You mentioned Dr. Sadelik asked you kind of how the normal process goes when a new patient starts. Why did you fail to get like a complete history, have the patient fill out their full medical history, consent forms? You know, I guess I'm trying to understand why you skipped so many steps of the normal new patient process.
Yeah, I don't really have a great response for that. I guess the main thing was that I was like, you know what, let's give them a try. As far as some of these peptides, I see them as, I don't really have a good response for it, really. I just don't really have a good response for that. Like, I failed totally in that regard there.
Okay. And looking at the labs, these were screenshots that were sent to you by the patient?
Yes.
Okay. Well, that's obviously, you know, in hindsight, hopefully that's a problem where you don't have necessarily a lab value that is directly correlated to the patient. At least what I saw, you can't count on that those lab results came from that patient. Maybe I'm not looking at it correctly, yeah. But I don't think that's the case. Based on the labs that were run, my other concern is how did you come to the conclusion that this patient would benefit from growth hormone peptides based on the lab values that were run?
Yeah, I didn't determine it based on those labs. I based it off of his symptoms and the lack of having, you know, renal or hepatic issues generally on these ones. So I was mainly screened his labs for just that he didn't have any major issues and prescribed them based off of symptoms for him.
Okay. And the current patients that you have coming into your clinic, what would your panel include? I'll just let you answer that question. What would your panel include for a patient who's interested in hormone optimization? What lab values are you going to run?
Yeah, I mean, like obviously a CBC, a CMP, we get, you know, vitamin D, TSH, you know, like an IGF-1, DHEAS, testosterone free total, sex hormone binding globulin, estradiol, you know, LHFSH, those kind of labs.
Okay. And then a patient's on therapy for a while, you're going to do follow-up labs to not only document actual lab value changes, but then also symptomatic improvements, I assume?
Yes.
Okay. And that's obviously, you know, again, in hindsight, looking at these labs, if we don't have an IGF-1 to monitor, you put the patient on things that are going to optimize growth hormone and IGF-1 values, you won't have any sense of understanding where we started, where we're going, and kind of the efficacy other than just patient feedback, correct?
Totally. Yeah, exactly.
Okay. So obviously, from my perspective, that's, you know, the not having the full patient history, you know, not having a complete set of labs, not having the labs documented to be attached to this patient, and then prescribing medications where you're not going to be able to monitor the efficacy based on pre and post lab values. Those are certainly my concerns, you know, at this point. I don't have any real concerns on the peptides per se that you were using as far as safety or efficacy, more so just all the decision making that brought you to prescribe them in the first place. That's all.
Yeah, I agree. I'm with you on that. I'm with you.
That's all my questions, Dr. Stadelick, for now.
Thank you. Ms. Gallon?
No questions for me at this moment.
Okay, thank you. Dr. Campbell?
Yes, sir. Can you hear me okay?
Yes, sir, I can hear you.
Thank you. As this time, I don't have any questions.
Dr. Spatt, questions?
Yes, I have a couple questions I just want to ask you. First of all, how long have you been doing peptide?
Peptide, probably, I don't know, in the last maybe year and a half or 2 years, I've been using quite a few different peptides.
Oh, okay. So with your previous past experiment with some of the patient, do they have the same similar side effect like Mr. Anthony was talking about? Hello?
I'm sorry, which ones are you referring to? I don't have that documentation in front of me.
Oh, okay. So in this case, I think Anthony is the one that having issue with the side effect. So I'm just curious, some of the patients that you previously treat for peptide, do they have any complaint or similar symptom or side effects that you know of?
No, I've never had irritability with any of the peptides that I've used, especially the growth hormone, releasing hormone peptides. You know, I haven't had any of that. The only thing I've generally had is improved sleep, faster recovery, and possibly a little bit of water retention, but those are, you know, I really haven't had a whole lot of negative side effects, so to speak.
Okay. The compound pharmacy that you use for the peptide, is it locally here or is it out state?
Yeah, it's here in state, Strive Pharmacy in Gilbert.
Oh, I see. Gotcha. Okay. And let's give one second here. Bear with me one second. I lost the page that I was looking for. Okay. So with the MK677 on that, did you prescribe to this particular patient?
MK677 was prescribed to Anthony, yes.
Oh, you did? Okay. Okay. And I think allude to what Dr. Popia was saying, you didn't have any previous lab report from him at all?
Yeah, not IGF-1.
Oh, okay. All right. So you pretty much you prescribe based on his symptom alone?
Correct.
Okay. All right. All right. Okay. Well, that's our question I have for now. Thank you, Doc.
Thank you, Dr. Spatt. Dr. Rubin?
Yo, this is Dr. Rubin. Hi, Dr. Razanin. I'm somewhat familiar with peptides. I have concerns about peptides. And I have concerns about physicians who don't monitor appropriately. And so you gave us a write-up dated yesterday, but you did a cut and paste. So the description for MK77 is also found under BP157. And so luckily I'm familiar with BP157, but I was just wondering, who wrote this? Did you?
I have one of MK here. I was in a rush putting that stuff together. I actually have a good one here that I have. I have people typically sign a consent and an informed consent and waiver form with the about MK677 and CJC 1295.
I took a lot of time reading your case for what was brought before us. I'd appreciate it if you come before the board next time, if you could proofread what you're going to send us. Otherwise, it wastes our time.
Okay. Sorry about that.
And so you have been ambiguous in answering our questions. You said you've worked for Peptides for some time. When Dr. Sadelec asked you how many times you've seen Anthony or AS, you said, well, two or three times. Like, do you know your case? Do you know your details? Or are we sitting here and you kind of don't know? You have your attorney present. And so, and you gave us, you know, something with a big giant mistake. So really, you know, the board's not familiar with the medicine or the peptide that you prescribed. So I'm wondering if you could provide clarity for us, because we're asking you questions and to me, you're not really answering them.
Okay, so what would you like clarity on?
Well, I'd like you to answer the two questions that you didn't give us clarity on.
So I don't know Anthony's case to completion. I've had some good visits with him over the phone. I don't know his case to completion.
And I'm sorry, this is Beth. We really have two patients here. We have the Arizona patient and we have the Wisconsin patient. If we could call the Wisconsin patient AS, I think that that would be most appropriate.
So noted, this is Dr. Rubin, AS. Yes, I believe Dr. Sadelec asked you how many times you saw AS. Your answer was two or three times, but that's not an answer I would expect for a physician that this board licenses before this board with this complaint in front of you. How many times did you see him, doctor?
I saw him on three occasions.
Okay. Gail, this is Dr. Rubin. We have chart notes on two is what I have in my packet.
I'm sorry, Dr. Rubin, was that directed at me?
Yes, I'm sorry. I have AS chart note from 4/25/2022 and 4/28/2022.
Dr. Rubin, I saw him two times with chart notes, and then a third time I saw him was not for a patient visit, so to speak. We recorded a podcast together. So I saw him on two occasions for medical reasons.
Got it. And thank you. And so the chart note that we have from April 25th of 22, is that the entirety of the note that's been submitted to us?
Yes, you have. I did find some. That's the entirety of the note that I have in my medical record system. Yes, I have some. I found a paper document, which I think has a few. I don't know if it's even chart-worthy or whatever, but it was just a comment from a phone call that I did have with him, which I just found recently, which was not put in the medical record. So, but yes, okay. That is the entirety of my medical record there.
Okay. And I need clarity on this. Give me, you say here on 4/25/22 in your consult notes, you say PCP last checkup 3 years ago. And I believe, and I may be wrong about this, that you also noted somewhere that we have labs from PCP. Yes, you do. On 4/28/2022, on the fourth line, you say we have some lab work from his PCP that looked at all the basic health parameters and they look good. And so I'm assuming you're referring to that taken 3 years prior, which is undated.
I don't think so. See, I'm not sure. I think
well, you
that
need
they
to
were
be
done.
Sure. So are you?
He told me that
yeah,
he could go
know.
And see a doctor and get some lab work done if he needed to. And so that was the lab work that came back. I don't know if that was his PCP or not.
Got it. But you said it was from his PCP.
Right.
Well, how important is measuring IGF-1 for you in your practice, especially in men? Well, you have a male-based practice, I think. And so are you screening, I guess, kind of answer that question. And I'm in the field. I'm a naturopathic oncologist, board certified.
Right.
So we think about IGF-1 quite a bit. And so I'm very curious if you're using secretagogues and looking for increase in IGF-BP3, et cetera. I'm sort of curious on how you regard that and how you follow people regarding IGF-1 in relationship, of course, to potential oncologic issues?
Yeah, it's a great point because you know, IGF-1 obviously in growth hormone, right? I mean, I don't need to speak to you because you're understanding of this, but of course, you know, I tell patients that everything grows, right? So if you have a known tumor or cancer or anything like that, obviously that's something to be, that's a contraindication, obviously, and something that we have to be, you know, obviously aware of and checking up on. So following up with IGF-1 and IGF-1, you know, BP and things like that are critical in following patients just to make sure that they don't, and checking in with their, you know, I'm doing one part, are they seeing their primary and are they following up with their general screenings and things like that? And then do they, if they come to me with cancer or anything like that, obviously that's something that's not acceptable at all to be treating anybody with.
On the first visit, I'm having trouble figuring this out because you don't follow any type of standard chart noting format, which is probably something you're going to discuss with the board here, but you have your header first is consult notes, which are in great paucity, especially I would think for intending to prescribe through somebody else things that affect hormones and brain function and are managing, intending to manage somebody with significant depression who is self-weaning off a widely distributed in the body antidepressant. And then it goes to supplements, which I don't know if this is what you prescribe for him or what he is taking. And then it goes to lab tests and you prescribe one. I mean, I'm guessing that you wanted these from Access Labs, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, but you didn't ask for an IGF-1 or a BP3. And then treatment notes are phone consult with AS 20 minutes. And then instructions, AS, and then you wrote a note, and then signed it. And so I don't know if this is like a note to him or to you, or if this is the chart note. And so there's just a lot here, and kind of, I think a lot of us in practice, you know, sort of when one thing goes wrong, lots of things go wrong in one particular case, and you really got to watch yourself. There's a lot here. And it also makes me wonder, and this is sort of to the rest of the board, what else could be lurking in other chart notes or in your practice. And so, Dr. Sadelek, my line of questioning is now done.
Thank you, Dr. Rubin. Following up with some of Dr. Rubin and
wait, Dr. Sadelek, I have to. Can I redact that? Can I? Okay, sorry about that. All right, Dr. Resnin. I have in my notes here that AS was awaiting sentencing for a child pornography charge. And so I don't think I'm wrong here because I've taken notes on this, but I'm curious how you see the discontinuation of sertraline and the addition of these peptides interfacing with this type of human who has these, what I'm guessing are these types of tendencies. I don't know any more than what I was given in my packet, but I thought that would be significant to at least discuss here. So thank you, Dr. Sadelek. But doctor, if you could comment on that.
Yeah, I mean, he had spoken to me about the sertraline as he didn't like the way he was feeling on the sertraline. And so at that initial visit, and Miranda was there as well, his wife, he talked about, you know, not appreciating it at all and having been on it for about a few months. So a short period of time. And so I figured, well, short period of time, I've weaned people off of antidepressants before. And in if they've been on for a short period of time, I know that prescription drugs, obviously the longer in the system, especially the, antidepressants, they essentially, it's a lot more difficult over a long, and I would have never done it had it not been for a short period of time. But that was what I took from that case. And then with and then he reported to me many times how great he felt. And so with the how good he feels, I was like, okay, things are going well, moods uplifted, whatever else. And with the peptides, I have never, like, no man in my practice that I've ever used peptides with has ever reported an increase in libido because of peptides, or have I seen sex hormone changes. I think you can find that in the literature as well, as far as sex hormone changes with peptides. Some of them, I was looking at some journal articles and saw that. But as far as the peptides and the sertraline, I don't see them having had any effect on the case. Now in the podcast that we recorded together, which was in, I have that date here.
You don't have to give us the date. That okay. It would probably be better if you don't give us the date, just to keep things
okay
anonymized.
So we recorded a podcast, and on that podcast, he talked about his, and this was with the police reports. This was during a time when he was offending. But during the podcast, one of the things he talked about was his recovery from pornography, so addiction. So I didn't know that about him. And most of my patients don't disclose that at a first visit. And it wouldn't have changed the peptide, you know, stuff in that case anyways, because I have lots of men who, like I said, don't report changes in libido or sex drive at all with peptides.
Are you certain that him beginning to feel so much better off the sertraline wasn't at all related to him feeling more libido and maybe feeling like engaging back into his addictive type behavior specifically related to the pornography addiction? I don't know. Like, you're the doctor on this case. And so
yeah.
I guess that is a question. How do you know that that's not what was actually transpiring as you were weaning him off sertraline, which I'm guessing you know the half-life of sertraline and the time to peak plasma concentration and how it regards itself in the body. But how do you know that that wasn't going on? Is that somewhere in that note that you uncovered that you didn't supply to us?
No, and I can do that, you know, of course, later. I just...
You can do what?
I can't remember what your question was now.
The question was, how, as a physician prescribing these, what appears to be in a very cavalier way, I'm wondering how, with an individual who is facing charges for child pornography and has an admitted pornography addiction, who is placed on an antidepressant, who is weaning and beginning to feel better, you don't note anywhere what feeling better means. And how do you know that his feeling better doesn't mean that he's feeling more libido and he may be reverting back to his own addictive behaviors where he may have felt just great in those addictive behaviors? And who knows? I don't know why he stopped. I don't know any of this. I don't know that you know. It's not in your chart notes. There's no data here. And so for me, there's a lot of depth here. And so it makes me curious about some of your statements. And so I'm assuming you don't know. So if you don't know, you can just agree with me that you don't know. And if you do know, then
yep.
I think the board would love to hear your answer. Okay. So then in terms of just curiosity, and when you say I've never seen reported changes in libido or this or that, or change, I think you said changes in sex hormones. If we were to ask you to give us 5 cases of evidence in similar cases, will you have that data where you've closely followed these men, looking at their dosages on routine lab testing schedules? I'm assuming you have that as part of your practice, since you just made the statement that what you do or don't observe in your practice. Would you have that data for us should we want it?
Yes.
Okay, great. Okay, Dr. Sadalek, I am now done. Thank you.
Thank you, Dr. Rubin. Dr. Russman, real quickly, on your, I just want to draw back real, take a quick glance at your Arizona practice that you have. I'm sure you run PSAs on your males, right?
That is correct, yes.
Okay. And if they have an elevated PSA, are you going to engage peptides?
Peptides, no. Neither testosterone. If they need a urologic workup, I send them straight to urology. Or if the PSA velocity is at a greater, you know, it takes off, or if it's elevated.
And then how often are you using peptides with your female patients?
I don't have any female patients really in my practice. I have a very few for semaglutide, and that's about it. But it's, yeah.
So you feel you're being diligent in terms of various types of carcinomas?
Yes.
Okay. And then currently per week, how many patients do you think you roughly see that you're doing peptide therapy with?
I don't know, peptide therapy with, maybe 5 to 10.
Okay, and do you see other patients for other conditions?
Yeah, or hormone replacement.
Do you see any patients for primary care, or is it mostly just specialized type care?
Mostly just specialized.
Okay. And do you still see the patient that was sending the prescriptions to Wisconsin?
No, I haven't seen him since that chart note.
Okay. Any other physicians have questions before I hear from MS? Board members, okay. The complainant is MS on the line?
I am.
And you pretty much have heard what transpired. Do you have any comments?
I do. I have a statement to read if that's okay with the board.
Yes, that'd be fine.
Okay. Well, thank you for having me. My name is Miranda. I'm a 33-year-old mother living in the state of Wisconsin. I've worked as a registered nurse in our local level 2 trauma and emergency department for 11 years. I have additional special training to be a forensic nurse examiner to care for and collect evidence from victims of sexual assault, domestic violence, and child abuse. On January 4th, 2023, my husband was arrested for possession and distribution of child pornography. It was a day that fractured my entire world, my entire life, my entire family, and my entire future. The very resources that I collaborated with to provide care for victims were suddenly in my kitchen providing care to me. For over 2 decades, my husband has struggled with an addiction to pornography, a fact that Dr. Peter Aisman has been aware of from the beginning of their relationship. Dr. Peter even hosted my husband on his podcast where the topic of my husband's addiction was discussed. My husband has also struggled with body dysmorphia, disordered eating, and generalized depression. Again, these were all things that Dr. Peter was aware of from the outset. My husband sought care from Dr. Peter for weight management, testosterone boosting, and muscle growth. Over the years, my husband has consulted me for similar concerns, but I've always recommended he tread lightly, given his apparent history with body dysmorphia and disordered eating. Despite all the history that Dr. Peter was aware of, he still went forward to prescribe my husband medications that only worked to exacerbate his underlying mental health concerns. While Dr. Peter was practicing and licensed to prescribe in Arizona, he was prescribing my husband in Wisconsin peptides and medications, including MK677, Ozempic, BPC157, and CJC1295, ephemerlin. After my husband was arrested, I contacted Dr. Peter to discuss all the medications my husband had been taking. During that conversation, Dr. Peter disclosed that my husband was taking MK677 and Ozempic, but he declined to inform me of the BPC-157 and CJC-1295. When Dr. Peter first started working with my husband, we did have a conference call in which Dr. Peter explained potential risks and benefits of the medications he intended to prescribe. My nursing background made me quite skeptical of these medications, but nevertheless, my husband was trusting of Dr. Peter to treat him appropriately. Dr. Peter has never met my husband in person. He's never physically assessed my husband. He's spoken with my husband on the phone a few times, but he has otherwise only communicated via text message to provide care to my husband. Dr. Peter did recommend pre-therapy lab work. I reviewed the results of these findings, and I'm still at a loss to understand why Dr. Peter would continue to develop a therapy regimen to further increase the testosterone of a 34-year-old male with a total testosterone of 797. All of his other blood work, including luteinizing hormone, prolactin, estradiol, were all within normal limits as well. Additionally, this was the only time that Dr. Peter recommended lab work for my husband. No follow-up lab work was ever recommended to evaluate the effect of the medication regimen that Dr. Peter was prescribing for my husband. His kidney function, liver function, hormone levels were never reevaluated to monitor for adverse effects of these medications. Once Dr. Peter developed the medication regimen, he informed my husband that he could not prescribe the medications in the state of Wisconsin. This is when Dr. Peter formulated a plan to prescribe the medications to another Arizona resident with the intent for these prescriptions to be diverted via mail to my husband. After several months of taking these medications intermittently per Dr. Peter's recommendations, my husband exhibited several signs of increased anger, behavior changes, and difficulty with impulse control. Per the criminal investigation into my husband, his illegal activity was only noted within the 6 months prior to his arrest. The only change in my husband's life that coincides with his illegal activity were the medications that Dr. Peter prescribed to him through predetermined fraudulent diversion. My husband's legal actions are choices. No medications made him make those choices, and he is solely responsible for that illegal activity. That being said, the hormonal adjustments caused by Dr. Peter's medication regimen and unchecked by his disregard for follow-up were undoubtedly instrumental in the behavior changes and impulsivity of my husband's choices. Throughout my nursing career, I've cared for good people. I've cared for bad people. I've cared for those who just survived trauma. I've cared for those who have inflicted trauma on others. I've cared for the good choices people make, and I've cared for the bad choices people make. It's my practice and my ethical duty to care for each patient with the highest care standards. Should Dr. Peter ever find himself in need of emergency care in my emergency department, I can promise that he would receive nothing but the best care from me and my team. The reason I'm saying this? Because this is what I believe to be good and ethical medicine. Although Dr. Peter did not practice good and ethical medicine with my husband and so many others, I'm proud to say that he and I do not believe in the same standards of care. I believe in the systems and regulations in place that protect patient safety, and it is clear through his actions that Dr. Peter does not feel the same way. He was willing to coordinate, deceive, manipulate, and lie to commit fraud. He intentionally prescribed medications to an Arizona resident with the knowledge and the intent that these medications would be diverted. He also knowingly preyed on the vulnerability of a man with clear addictive personality traits and body dysmorphia. I may never know or understanding the reasoning behind Dr. Peter's personal standards of care, but I do know one thing, and that is that I believe he practices bad medicine. And that is all I have. Thank you for your time.
MS, thank you. And that was well stated. In your opinion, what was the reason? Do you have any logic on why the Dr. Resin kept in contact and kept prescribing for your husband?
Yeah, I do. My husband developed a relationship with Dr. Resin and was also serving as a contact for him for other local men in the Wisconsin area for men's healthcare. So Dr. Peter was also consulting other men that live in the area in which I live in Wisconsin, providing consultations on men's health care as well.
Okay. Board members, since we have MS with us, questions for her?
None. This is Dr. Rubin. Dr. Sedlick, may I ask MS a question?
Yes, sir.
MS, I don't know if the timing is right. I listened intently to what you said. Thank you for your testimony. You hit on your points are things that I took very seriously and had mentioned in my line of questioning. Did you notice any changes regarding the addictive type behaviors once AS was weaning sertraline and started on this cocktail of peptides?
Yeah, he wanted to wean off the Zoloft because he was having erectile dysfunction related to the initiation of that. It was very difficult for him. He, you know, given all of his other mental health concerns, it makes sense that that would be another stressor for him. As he went off of it, I actually had on several occasions asked him if he was really sure that he should be off of it because he was doing so well while he was taking it.
What do you mean by so well while he was doing it or taking it?
His moods were so much better stabilized. His outlook, you know, I recall having a conversation with him about his anger and how he would go from 0 to 10 very, very quickly. Never aggressive, never, you know, inappropriate in that sense, but just very angry about any little thing. And I had asked him then, you know, are you really sure that you shouldn't be taking this Zoloft?
What do you mean by inappropriate in that sense?
I mean, he was never like physically harmful in any way to me. When I say anger, emotional anger is really what I'm intending to convey.
Got it. But did you? Okay. I think I'm okay. Thank you, MS. Thanks, Dr. Sadalek.
Mm-hmm. Thank you, Dr. Rubin. Anyone have any other questions for MS? Okay.
Yeah, this is Dr. Spad. Can I ask MS question?
Yes, Dr. Spad, go ahead.
Hi, thank you for the testimony and thank you for that. I'm not familiar with peptide therapy. I just want to tell that, but I just want to ask you in regarding to the peptide therapy. You did mention that you and AS did have a Zoom meeting with Dr. Peter. Did you mention any of this to the doc when you have the Zoom meeting with him, with your husband?
Yeah, I am an emergency room nurse through and through, so I have a very hard time watching my mouth from time to time. So I'm very open and honest with my communication, and I voiced my concern about this. These are not FDA approved medications. And in my practice, that is very much a, you know, a beacon that I look to before, you know, medications that I use. and I voiced that concern. This was a situation where my husband had said to me that this was really something that he wanted to do and that he felt that he thought a lot about it. He said that he put a lot of trust in Dr. Peter, and it was his body. It was something he wanted to do. And so I voiced my concern. I think he heard it. And, you know, he still wanted to move forward. I will note too that the meeting that we had, the conference call that we had, was a phone call. It was not a Zoom meeting at all.
Okay. And when you addressed this to Dr. Peter, did he respond to you? Or mainly you just let AS talk directly to Dr. Peter?
We did have a pretty good back and forth conversation. I will be very honest in saying that I do not recall all of the nuances and details of that conversation. But I do know that, you know, Dr. Peter worked to reassure me and to try to gain my trust as well by saying that he had gone through a residency and that he was familiar with Zoloft and he knew what it would take for my husband to wean off of that and that it would be very safe and that he felt that, you know, any regimen he developed moving forward would be beneficial for my husband.
Okay. Now, at that time, were you aware that Dr. Peter signed off prescription to JB, who lived in Arizona, and sent the medication to AS? You were aware of all those, right?
No, I was not aware of it at that time. I was not aware that the prescriptions were not prescribed to my husband that the name on the prescription was not to my husband until I had seen them in the refrigerator after his arrest.
I see.
Okay. I was going to throw them away, and that's when I realized that the name was not my husband's.
Okay, I got you. Okay. All right. Well, thank you. That's all I have. Thank you, Mr. Mm-hmm. Chairman. Thank you, MS.
Thank you.
Thank you, Dr. Spad. Anyone else have any questions for MS? Okay. So, does Dr. Peter's attorney want to speak?
Yes, just briefly, if I may.
Yes, please.
I understand, obviously, the frustration by MS regarding the situation with her husband and the frustration by the board members for lack of information. Dr. Raisinen obviously acknowledges that, you know, he shouldn't have done what he did here, but I certainly think that it's presumptuous for anyone to draw a causal relationship between two temporally sequenced events. We can't say to any reasonable degree of medical probability or medical certainty as to whether or not these peptides had any impact on the patient's behavior. There isn't any indication that I'm aware of or that Dr. Raisinen has encountered with any other patient that it has caused them to have inappropriate sexual behaviors. MS certainly stated that it was an issue that her husband had prior to criminal charges. So I just think, while I'm not trying to justify what Dr. Raisinen did in terms of providing medication to someone in Wisconsin as opposed to Arizona, I don't think that the members of the board can draw a causal relationship between just the two temporally sequenced events. So again, Dr. Raisinen is happy to provide this board with any additional information that they want with respect to his practice in general, with respect to peptides and other patients, his forms, things that he typically does with patients to provide the board with some comfort with respect to his typical practice. And again, any continuing education or monitoring that this board would require of him, he would certainly be willing to do that. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Carvis. Board members, I think really kind of what we're at, and it's up to you, is at this phase, I think we're going to most likely look in probably doing some type of consent agreement. And if we do a consent agreement, we'll have to craft that.
Dr. Stalick?
Yes, sir.
Could I ask for an executive meeting?
Sure.
Okay.
So Dr. Spad asked to go into executive session for legal advice with Ms. Campbell. So I will second his motion. And all board members, Ms. Anthony will do roll call.
Yes. Dr. Sadlick?
Aye.
Dr. Popio?
Aye.
Ms. Gallen?
Aye.
Dr. Campbell?
Aye.
Dr. Spat?
Aye.
Dr. Rubin?
Aye.
Motion carries.
I'll see everyone in executive session. It's 12:57.
Thank you.
Can somebody forward me? This is Diva Galan, the link. I don't know why I can't find it. For the executive session.
I'll send it to you.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you.